This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
We're going to move on now to the latest in the Charlie Kirk assassination. Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, joining us. Robin, as always, thank you so much for being here. I know we've been texting on and off throughout the weekend. Trying to solve the world's problems, as we always do.
I'm sorry. I just, you know, how refreshing is it to listen to Daybell go nuts?
This is a weird world we're living in. I know.
I interrupted. Go ahead.
You've been talking about this all throughout the weekend on Fox, on News Nation, and whatnot. I want to get your take here, just kind of overall. What new things have we learned over the weekend? What has been standing out to you? I know the big question most people have, and I don't know that we're ever going to truly get a satisfactory answer to it. But is the why? What led to all of this? What have you been finding out?
Quite a few things. Nothing that's shockingly unusual with him as an assassin. But what's interesting, though, is anytime someone kind of fits a pattern, I like to kind of see what doesn't fit a pattern, because it's a lot easier to kind of see what's different than there is what is. And with him, we're getting a lot of leakage. You know, this is not the case where we're hunting for someone for months or weeks or even just a number of days, because he was caught pretty rapidly. Mm-hmm. And the reason why he was caught so rapidly is multiple areas here that we're gaining a lot of data on to help us assess what we're seeing. And that is not just was he attempted assassination and assassination in front of 3,000 people, but also he surrounded himself with people that he had a lot of leakage with. Mm-hmm. And no one's protecting him. And so that says a lot, too. So we can do a little bit deeper dive of there. And some, again, everything's conjecture, because he's not saying anything himself yet.
Yeah.
And I say that yet because, I mean, just look at the arc of this guy. And that's what we'll talk about. You know, what I'm seeing is this guy has an arc. This guy's arc is he won't shut up.
Yeah.
And so even he was like, I was on Fox this morning, and they're saying that he's been described as quiet, mm-hmm. which is interesting because since we're getting so much data from people around him that are sharing a lot of information about him, he doesn't sound quiet.
No, I mean, what I would garner from that is quiet, probably around his family, I'm going to guess. And maybe not so much around his peers or people who thought in a similar way as him. I mean, what we've learned, he's a 22-year-old, grew up in Washington, Utah, near St. George, suburban Republican family. His parents are registered Republicans. His father works in a kitchen countertop installation, and his mother's a social worker. The family is described as a close-knit, outdoorsy, involved in the Mormon church. Neighbors and family, they called him squeaky clean, no criminal record. On the surface, everything looked normal, you know, and I say normal in quotes, in air quotes there. He was the oldest of three brothers, known for his academic success, 4.0 student, including a scholarship he got in 2021. A lot of reports indicate the family celebrated his achievements, spent time together on outings like camping and hunting. Again, you walk away from this, and the last thing you think is this guy's going to go do something like this. And there's certainly people in families that, you know, are looked at as the black sheep or whatever you want to call it, where they disagree with the structure and the belief system of the group of that family. And you can have it either way. You can have very right-leaning families, very left-leaning families, and you have one or, you know, two that branch out, and they're diametrically opposed a lot of times with the views of the family. I don't know that. What do we know here on this? Do we know where he was leaning? I guess, and not that it justifies anything, but there's just been so much information that comes out on this thing, and it's been head spinning. I don't know what I just don't know what to believe, what to know right now, because there's so much misinformation. There's so much coming out on social media that's just nothing but crap, just feeding into people's fears and anger both ways. I mean, it's sickening. I mean, it's just like, what is this? Give me your thoughts.
This is what I've done all weekend nonstop.
Yeah.
You know, because And you're right on this one. There is so much data coming in that's created a lot of noise. And I can't stand noise because noise is distracting. People keep wanting me to analyze this symbol, analyze this etching. You know, what's this mean? What's this mean? So I had to stop and I'll walk everyone through my thought process on how I do this. And that is, so it's like, first of all, he does fit the exact pattern with some deviations of a lone wolf assassin. All right.
Sure.
So 22 years old. And I think I want to really point out this 22 year old aspect too, because he is not at the age yet where the prefrontal lobes fully form. So he's definitely more inclined to emotional impulse, because I have said, and others have said, but I definitely said at the very get-go, it's not a professional hit because he had a plan, but just not a good plan. And then some people are saying, oh, but he ran circles around the Bureau and FBI. No. So, and what reason why I say that is because when your emotional brain is engaging, acting, strategizing, it is not a thoughtful brain. So let's just, and so I'll go on this point, then I'll go on the larger point.
Yeah.
You know, so if we're looking at assessing, if we want to get in our own cult of comparison here, you know, a really good example of someone who actually did have law enforcement running circles around themselves for years and years, who was a lone assassin, Ted Kaczynski.
Sure.
Yep.
There's a guy that sat in the back, strategized, employed, analyzed, took an action, learned, refined, did it again. You know, so that one was working. And, you know, devastatingly. Mm-hmm. So this individual was not doing that. This is an emotionally hijacked individual. And so now let's look at boiling everything down to what would inspire, because again, we asked ourselves that question, how I reverse this. What would inspire someone to take this action? And so I go back, I take in all this data and I think to myself, what is the most primal drive that we have as a species that inspires each of us to take action? Fear. All right. So if I understand as a species, fear is our greatest driver, and at what applies to every single one of us, that we're always seeking our safety, security, and prosperity from our own point of view, what that means to us, and fear is my driver. So fear is what drove him. So then what happens is what inspired fear? Mm-hmm. So what inspires fear in general is fear of the unknown. And when do we have the unknown? And this really comes down to, I think, what the crux is that I've really boiled down here when I keep talking on the news, is that fear happens when curiosity dies. Mm-hmm. And so if you are, so now we're going to put our way big conjecture hat on, and I'll apply to people in general, not to this particular situation, because I don't want to, we're just getting done talking about the Daybells and they had an interesting religious background, and mm-hmm. We have some challenges that there might have or may not have played an issue here. But what from my ideas and my conjecture happened is that he got rooted into being surrounded by a thought process on his beliefs and morals and ethics of the people around him. And it was put on him. Mm-hmm. And at a certain age, what happens is at all of us as kids, as we're growing up, our families teach us how to be safe and to take care of us by judging the world around us. And they're going to instill in us our own morals, ethics, and beliefs until around age 9, 10, 13, basically when we go to middle school. Then all of a sudden we hit middle school and we start getting our own ideas. And then if you have a group of people around you that are doubling down on their lack of curiosity and shoving it in you, and you actually start getting different ideas without validating and exploring those ideas side by side in a healthy way, the potential to battle against that at some point is there. Not that not that this is what happened. I'm just walking us all through this this where curiosity dies. So Dr. Diane Hamilton, she did a great wrote a great book called Cracking the Curiosity Code. And it's really, we are genetically and biologically coded for curiosity. It is actually what helped us evolve as a species. And when that gets crushed, fear ensues. And so what's a byproduct of fear is that rage, anger, discontentment, resentment, all those emotions start edging up, which then disconnects the entire cognitive brain in our thought processing. Then, so we're not being exposed to the validation we need in our thought process on one side. And so we're going to be attracted to another side. And this other side is where the online grooming starts happens, where the online radicalization, as they're calling it, is definitely happening. And what happens is they're doubling down on their lack of curiosity. And so they're validating all these negative thoughts, all these negative emotions. And they're taking someone who might have been predisposed, may have, because again, genetics or biology, or learned that we're all wound collectors or problem solvers, might have helped double down on a wound collecting victim and a lack of curiosity and escalated it and validated it. And then we get a critical life moment that happens, that is a triggering event that takes us over from rage to action for violence. And, you know, again, way early because they haven't explored all these things. I'm still thinking that we're going to discover through the investigation when we find out about it, if it goes to trial, that there was a moment in there that said, I've had enough. It looks like it, you know, pure conjecture, it might be centered around his trans partner in some way, because there's theories, you know, he's out there doing something to protect them. I think there's something around that relationship that's going to be that triggering moment. So that's my long, as I do all narrative answers, saying I think curiosity died, rage got you know, reamped up on this online community where he was finding his own validation.
Do you think we're the society is encouraging people to not be curious anymore?
Yeah.
And that scares me. I'm seeing a whole generation, and I'm not ragging on the younger generation. That's not what I'm doing. I think there's a lot of brilliant people who are coming up behind us. But I also feel like we are being programmed to not think, that here's what you should believe and go forth.
Stacey, you're so spot on. So in doing my research on this too, so what happens on these radicalized online forums is the algorithms, the way algorithms work on all these social platforms is they will help you double down on this groupthink and this negative thought process, because what sells ad space? That. And so when you get more and more exposed to this, because that's what the algorithm keeps feeding you, you're going to keep getting more and more immersed into it. And so, you know, it's funny because I always, as you all know, I always come back and relate it to my own kids and what they actually have selected to do on their own. My kids are not on social media. My daughter's on TikTok, but that's it. I mean, they don't maintain a presence. They don't post it. As a matter of fact, even with my own kids, like my son has a great quote, and I got his permission to talk about it today. So my son, as I've said to you all before, he's an amazing jet pilot, you know, Marine Corps jet pilot. And their training they do is just, it's pure chaos. They train them to deal with chaotic situations. And he's got this philosophy that I've never heard it quite put this way, but it was so funny. This guy, one of these instructors is known as, they'll go to the simulator before they do a flight, and he'll like blow up the plane. Basically, he will fail so many systems that it is literally, it's like Kobayashi Maru from Star Trek. There's no way to save the plane or save yourself, and they know they're in for it when they go to this with this one instructor. I saw my son the other day, like last week, on his way to work to go fly and do this this training session, and he goes, "Well, today's going to be a great learning day." You know, and it's that mentality which is lacking, because instead of saying, "Oh, this guy's an ass," or no, today's gonna be a great learning day, we're gonna get some reps out of today, it's gonna suck really bad, but I know I'm gonna learn something from this. And so, you know, to your point, Stacey, that is what is lacking, because that social media platform of the cult of comparison and showing everyone the 5-second highlight reel from the 24 hours of suck in your life, just is not reality. And they get sucked into it because it's the lack of curiosity. And what happens is it's beat out of us at a young age. Yeah. If curiosity gets beat out of us at like 6 or 7 years old, because your parents just want you to shut up and do it as I say.
No,
it's never sparked. Einstein is who Einstein is because he was constantly doing these thought experiments. He had no money. He's acting as a patent clerk for years and years and years. His dad was a failing engineer, but he's an entrepreneur. And anytime something came up, he said, "Well, let's look at this. Let's examine this." And so all those things at an early age, that curiosity kept getting spurred. Leonardo da Vinci, same thing. Benjamin Franklin, same thing. All these great people in history are all about the curiosity. And so when you snuff it out, that's when bad things start happening.
Well, that energy has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
People who think in curious manners, who are naturally exploring everything in their environment, when you close them in a box, that energy has got to go somewhere. Yeah. And if you don't let it go into a creative outlet, oh, God help us, it's coming out sideways. And is that what we're seeing in today's world?
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, when you look at this case, this is just conjecture, just trying to observe and see what's going on here. When you have two very rigid lines of thinking. One, and they're both fear-based, where his very rigid line of thinking, he's been told his whole life, this is bad, this is horrible, you shouldn't do this, very, you know, the way it seems he was brought up, and I'm not saying it's wrong the way, I'm just saying this is how he was brought up from what we understand. So very, this is bad. Then he's discovering, oh, he doesn't necessarily agree with that. He doesn't feel those same ways. Maybe he feels very differently, but, you know, there's a lot of shame over here to be even able to say these things out loud. So this, to me, on the surface, when I look at it, it goes, this seems like someone who was really lashing out, who had been in his own mind and in his own way of dealing with things, lack of problem-solving skills here, clearly. Mm-hmm. It looks like he felt very boxed in, and this is, rather than dealing with this in any sort of healthy way, he lashed out. And then the other side on this, too, they feel very boxed in, and how dare this, you know, somebody have this different opinion. We're going to lash this way. Nobody is doing any sort of problem solving or just trying to hear each other out and go, let's not be so afraid of each other. Let's listen to each other. Let's be curious about each other, because the solution lies in understanding each other and our differences. It doesn't lie in killing each other off.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.